The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Star Wars Minute. It's the daily podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate the Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. I'm Pete the Retailer from PeteTheRetailer.com.
I'm Alex Robinson from ComicBookAlex.com.
I'm Matt Crispin from Chapo Trap House Podcast.
I'm Virgil Texas, also from Chapo Trap House, co-author of The Chapo Guide to Revolution, a manifesto against logic, facts, and reason.
Well, thanks for joining us, guys. You're newcomers. You were here for the Force Awakens. We figure, you know, new era of Star Wars. We'll usher in a new era of guests.
You're a new attitude. So,
thanks for having us. When we got this invitation, I went right on Wikipedia. I looked up Star Wars, and it looks interesting. I'm ready to talk about it.
You've done all the purely researched the saga in the past couple of days. It's been like,
yeah, it turns out this thing's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm. It's an obscure 70s movie that's recently come back into favor.
Cult classic.
Uh-huh. Well, today we're talking about minute 16 of Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. Minute 16 starts with Rey jumping into action, and it ends with Rey giving BB-8 driving directions. So we hear Rey speak for the first time.
Of course, that's true.
It's
gibberish.
Yeah, those famous words that world-famous Star Wars quote that everybody has on T-shirts and all that, Talama Parkwell.
Yeah, she hasn't spoken. I guess she speaks English later on in the minute too.
Basic.
She assumes that BB-8 speaks basic.
Has anyone yet commented? Because you've done 16 minutes. Presumably, you've done footage of BB-8 on Jakku.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone commented on the fact that a ball-shaped droid would get no traction on sand and would basically be immobile?
No,
because it's true. It's a fact.
Right.
A BB-8, like that kind of locomotion he's got with his little ball, on sand, it would just displace and he would just spin in a circle. He'd never move anywhere.
There's probably some, microscopic roughness to the material. Yeah, some kind of something
magic,
that's giving it traction.
Words, there's magic.
Tiny micro actuators pop out for traction at the bottom. Like that, what was that? That battery-operated monster truck that had claws that popped out of the tires? That's like
BB-8. I remember that.
Yeah.
See, that thing was, ruled.
Yeah.
It's not magic. It's material science,
no, it's
which is the future.
Would that have been true for R2-D2, too?
R2-D2 would have been able to move. It just would have been very arduous because he had those little feet, so he could sort of just move by stepping.
Oh, but he couldn't
stepping.
Roll. He couldn't
he
roll.
Couldn't roll, but he could move with steps.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
He didn't move very fast, but he could have moved. But like BB-8, if he gets an incline, he's done.
I like the idea of R2
can't do anything.
Hobbling around like someone who, with their pants down around their ankles, slowly making their way to the.
I like the idea of R2-D2 wearing pants.
It is
kind
of weird.
Shouldn't all these droids be like hover?
Shouldn't they
have some sort of boost technology at all times?
Like Jonas Venture Jr.
Just something. It's so. I mean. It just seems so awkward to see them trying to move around.
You know
it's the space world.
That's energy intensive. You can't just hover everywhere at all times.
We've had very tedious conversations about the nature of energy in Star Wars. Yes, and my feeling is that for a society that far advanced that has warp or whatever the heck you want to call it and the ability to jump across the galaxy like that, that there is no energy scarcity. It's got to be some sort of fusion technology. That's the only thing that makes sense. And as such, everything should be able to move sort of hover-wise.
Well, and I'm telling you that faster-than-light travel, and this has been well established, requires a certain resource to accomplish. It's not using a general, like, infinite energy source that can have, you know, infinite applications.
Right. I understand. They've established that on the shows, in the movies. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying that is not true. That would not happen.
You're right. This did not happen. This did not actually happen millions of years ago.
Although somewhere in the galaxy, this could all be happening right now.
A society with that advanced travel technology would have solved energy.
Hmm. And we have seen floating droids. We have seen floating droids in other.
It's true.
The robot.
It's true.
And they special editioned in all those little, like, annoying kind of thought bubble droids.
Yeah. Darth Maul had some droids that floated.
Mm-hmm. I will say the one thing that always vexed me is I get the faster than light travel because that's kind of like that's a key thing in the films that has its own explanation and it has its own visuals. Like, it's clearly important. But how does the faster-than-light communication work?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Especially because they, in Rogue One, don't they say at one point, we can't contact them because they're in hyperspace?
Could be.
We can't tell them to come back because they're in hyperspace.
They can speak when it's convenient.
Yeah, but even just, like from one galaxy to another, I mean, that's ridiculous. There would have to be some kind of, pneumatic tube that's like actually shooting.
Series of tubes.
They write a letter, they put it in a little bank tube, and then that goes through hyperspace.
I mean it. I think it's practical that there would be like a Western Union of some kind.
I like that idea.
Pony Express.
Yeah. There you go. Uh-huh.
Telegram.
Space Pony.
For Mr. Luke Skywalker.
And that guy showed up just a little bit too late, too. So he shows up at the charred remains of Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, like, a telegram for Owl.
He just leaves it at their feet and backs away slowly.
There's our comedy sketch. We'll put that up of the guy, the telegram guy, showing up with important information just a little bit too late for all the key scenes. He's got a telegram for the people of Alderaan. He's got, telegram for Jabba. Talama Parkwal.
That sounds like a Fox News host.
And then she says, Parkwal Zaytana, which is Zaytana, of course, the DC magician. That she's speaking Tito speak.
Tito speak.
Because that's just Tito. The alien that she encounters, his name is Tito because his race is Tito because the Titos don't have names. It's just Tito.
Well, they have like a hive mind that they all communicate. It's like the Borg. They all communicate telepathically.
I don't know. Do they?
That's what it says in the Wikipedia.
What? Okay. Wikipedia says that?
All the Titos, yeah.
Wait a minute. Tito. So Tito is not one guy. It's a race.
Yeah. But both. So they don't. Yeah.
But it's a hive mind race where it's one consciousness.
Yeah. Okay. And they don't just kind of self-identify.
Because I was going to say, if it was just him, I would have been like, excuse me, Wittgenstein has proven that there can be no such thing as a private language.
Whoa.
But I guess he's got the language to communicate within himself, and then other people learn it.
Hive mind wouldn't have internal communications, from the nodes. The nodes wouldn't talk to each other and deliberate. It's literally just one mind. At least that's how I conceive of it.
Yeah,
That's how your hive mind works.
Yeah, that's in my canon. Hive mind would work that way.
Everybody's hive is different. That's my new self-help book available now on Amazon.
Find your hive.
Don't hive shame.
So Tito, she jumps over the ridge and sees that Tito, or one of the Tito. A member of Tito has captured BB-8 in a net. Yeah, and Tito from
Civil War.
Yeah. the Battle of Antito. Uh-huh. She it could be a she. We don't know, right? She later genders him. He's got BB-8
totally
kind of captures
him.
She does. I don't know. Speaking of gendering, so it's Tito, and Tito is riding something called a Lugga Beast.
Yeah.
Which the most, you might have some information about the Lugga Beast. The most interesting piece of information that I read about the Lugga Beast is that it is currently unknown if they urinate, defecate, or how they reproduce.
Yes.
So.
Hopefully that'll be in the Lugga Beast standalone. Lugga Beast, a Star Wars story that will be coming.
Has no one just... followed one around and waited.
30 minutes of footage of it, defecating,
right.
Eating, you know, making digestive noises.
They only do it once in their life. They defecate.
They save
once
it all up,
like 4 hours.
Oh my god, that'd be so convenient.
Although by the end you'd be like, oh
yeah, no. Yeah. Those last few years would be a bit of a struggle.
No, the thing is, it would not be convenient if you save it up your whole life and then all that cumulative amount of time you have to spend it once.
Yeah.
So you're just spending 5 years on the toilet.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd take
but
that.
We'd rearrange our society around it. It's like the, you know, the cultures that have like the menstrual hut kind of a thing where you'd have like once it became time, you'd be like,
gangster.
Okay, you know, yeah, the menstrual hut. Once you got to a certain point, they'd be like, okay, you know what? I'm approaching my poop time, everyone. So. You'd go off and have a nice, comfortable kind of like people.
It's like when you get called up for National Guard duty,
right?
To say he's going to the bathroom for a while, hold his job.
The only other in-universe stuff I have about the Lugga Beast is that that helmet mask thing on their face is permanently fused on.
Oh,
so no one knows what they really look like or. What the deal is with that?
Well, presumably the people who put them on do. Someone ask them.
Tito, I guess, might know.
Ask Tito.
Right. He's not telling any secrets about the. He doesn't even want to tell if they defecate or any of that stuff.
So. Yeah.
Well, that's animal torture, frankly.
Yeah.
I really like the look of the Lugga Beast. It kind of combines a lot of classic things. It's like part dewback, part sand crawler.
Hotshots part dewback.
Yeah. On the move. Yeah, I think it's a cool. I've always had a soft spot for big dumb animals.
Right,
being a big dumb animal myself, empathize.
I wasn't gonna say it. Well, speaking of the dewback, we've been doing this kind of switching channels essentially back and forth between one of the criticisms of this movie is how they basically just kind of rehashed old Star Wars and it's some people that's a benefit, some people that's a criticism. But it's interesting now to go back, since we're doing minute by minute, we have the luxury of going, okay, well, what happened in this minute of Star Wars, and in this minute of Star Wars, dewbacks.
Wow.
This is the where we get introduced to the stormtroopers that are looking for C-3PO and R2-D2, and they're riding the first kind of beast of burden that we see in the Star Wars universe.
Had to be a conscious effort on their part. Even like to subliminally just make you feel like you're watching Star Wars by... Because especially with the editing and stuff, that had to be like...
So far, the fact that we've had, at least one a week where it's just like, oh, interesting. Like,
yeah.
That's like, and it's not that much of a stretch. I'm assuming that they, it was somewhat intentional that they at least had, beats kind of mapped out.
That Beast of Burden thing, that's part of the charm of the movies, right? Especially the original one, that, it's the future and there's all this technology, but
there's... The past, actually, but...
Yes, okay, fine, but a technological future.
Every past is somebody's future.
That's dude, you blew my mind.
That, they have fast and light travel and all these shiny spaceships, but they still would have to rely on things like indigenous Beasts of Burden.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny that they use Beasts of Burden, which are like the most simple forms of transport, and then yet they have floating land speeders and all that stuff,
and
too.
Like faster than light travel.
Yeah, in the same
it's not the kind
world.
Of future where everything is shiny and chrome, where everything is Coruscant.
Right.
Right. I have some more Tito information.
Sure.
Do you want to hear some more about Tito?
Yes, mm-hmm. Always.
Was he involved in the victory tour?
I think that the Yugoslavian form of socialism that emerged after World War II was a very promising hybrid of markets and command economy, and he kept those fractious ethnicities together peacefully for 40 plus years, and people need to give him credit for that.
Yeah. Hats off to Tito.
He's played by Kieran Shaw. Who,
yes.
Do you have this information?
I just read that shortly before. It's, yeah.
He currently holds the Guinness record for shortest pro stuntman in film, and he's had it since 2003. So he's had a good 15-year run as the shortest stuntman.
How short?
I think like about 4 feet, I think. 4 foot one, maybe?
Take that, Arvid Chenilworth. He's been just staring at him, a picture of him for 15 years.
You think
if I was just a little shorter.
Filing the soles of his feet every night to try to get that,
to get a little
those extra inches.
And perhaps not surprisingly, he was in Lord of the Rings. He played Frodo's double. He was also in Chronicles of Narnia, Solo, a Star Wars story, Last Jedi, Rouge One. He was in every nerdy thing. Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Return of the Jedi, Dark Crystal. Where does it end? And he's also a published poet. So he's not just about being short and doing stunts.
If I were him now, I would release a book of poetry called Tito Speak.
That's a good one. And they are native to Jakku. So keep that in mind next time you're going.
I like that there, because apparently it's easy to get, or Kiran Shah often gets confused with Deep Roy because they're both, like, they both have this really specific, like, oh no, those are both, you know, Indian actor, Indian little people who were born in Nigeria and then came into film, moved into the film industry in the late 70s, early 80s, and like, how unusual that we have two people with that specific background that are also, and then also in a lot of the same franchises, and so it's like, oh, okay.
Well, always two there are.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
You know, I met Deep Roy.
Oh, yeah?
On the way here?
It was very... No, not on the way here.
Oh, okay.
I could tell the story if you want.
Please.
It's an odd story from my odd past.
All right.
I was in Los Angeles when I was in college for an internship, and I got fired. And so I, long story short, I ended up with two vagabonds. One man whose claim to fame was that he had written one episode of the TV show Friends, and he kept talking about that.
Do you remember which episode it was?
No. And
the one where something,
yeah,
I don't know.
The one where he meets Deep
the
Roy.
One with Virgil's friend,
and the other one was this is an Indian man who was apparently came from some wealth and kept telling stories about how extravagantly wealthy he was, even though he didn't appear so. And I was helping them audition actors for a TV pilot that the wealthy man had commissioned the Friends writer to make. And the pilot was about an Indian man in America who inherits a Jewish deli. And it's called New Delhi.
Ah, I see.
And for some reason, Deep Roy was there. And he was attached to this project. That's my Deep Roy story.
Wait, so how did you meet? Oh, so you met him through the writer guy.
In the casting process.
Yeah.
So was it like at an office? You were, you know, hey,
they
this
were
is
just
Deep
around.
Roy.
They would rent, you know, like theater spaces, which, you know, there's like an abundance of that stuff in LA, and they would do it there.
Was he cool?
No, it wasn't cool.
Aww.
Were you not listening to the story?
Was he cool? Was Deep Roy
no,
cool?
No, Deep Roy cool?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I remember
was,
you waiting.
He was weird.
Up, yeah.
I didn't really have any great conversations
with
him.
He was Droopy McCool.
Oh, there you go. So BB-8 gets captured by Tito.
Oh, I had one more Tito fact.
Okay, yes. From the Tito files.
Tito's voice is David Acord, who is a you know, Skywalker Sound employee who is perhaps most infamous for also voicing the GH-7 medical droid, the one who explains that, like, well, Padme lost the will to live. Like,
oh,
she's dying because she's sad. Like, that the guy who brought that into the universe is also the squirrely voice of Tito.
Do you think he hits the convention circuit?
No, he's working behind the scenes still.
You can't
he could.
Do both?
Yeah, he could do both, I'm sure.
Or think you only do the convention circuit once?
I can't imagine doing that of your own free will.
The convention circuit?
Yeah.
Oh,
if
man.
You had any other job to go to,
you
sit
wouldn't,
there
you wouldn't
on a card table and have just the sweatiest nerds.
You wouldn't do it?
Well, here's why. Like, bad case scenario, sweaty nerds come up to you all day. Worst case scenario, they don't. And you're just standing there.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. And I've seen footage and I've seen convention floors and the guy where no one is there, you'd want to kill yourself.
Yeah, I was at the Pittsburgh Comic Con and I saw Erin Gray, who played Wilma in Buck Rogers. And she was in Silver Spoons as well. Mm-hmm. And she was just sitting there reading a newspaper because there was no one coming up.
Brutal. Brutal.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
It was before cell phones, so.
No, I'd keep my cushy gig at Skywalker Ranch.
Yeah.
Right. They probably got free burritos or whatever.
Hey, get ready to hear this in 20 years. Now in conference room C, Matt Chrisman from Chapo Trap House will be signing autographs. They will not be personalized.
Right.
Thankfully, nothing will exist in 20 years, so I don't have to worry about that happening.
I don't know. Like, on the one hand, I see your point, but on the other hand, it's like, well, sit down and write your name for 4 hours and we'll give you a couple $100 is not like. Not the worst deal in the world.
Beats digging ditches.
Out of all the Star
I'm
Wars...
I'm just saying, I don't want to be excluded from the convention circuit consideration.
Out of all the Star Wars, Billy Dee Williams was probably the biggest... He was probably the biggest convention circuit guy, right?
Let's see. There have been some surprising people recently. Oh, I know. I know. Yeah. The only thing that I'm picturing right now is that it was like a train station, essentially. We went to Star Wars Celebration, and they had, 40 different people signing at once, and you had to look up on the map to see Deep Roy's at A7 and I can go around to there, and then you had to kind of follow the map to figure out who was who and what was going to and there were weirdly I think there was it did feel awkward because there were also I think prices posted, so you would see basically you could rank how important people thought they were. But
it's the real Worthington scale.
Yeah.
More money equals better than, and it's objective.
Yeah.
Well, America.
Mm-hmm.
BB-8 gets snagged by Tito here, and Rey comes over and cuts him loose.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the deal? Why does Tito just give in? And what is the legal status of droids here?
And this is clearly a valuable droid, as we find out
working
later
and
parts of the film.
And why does Rey do it?
Yeah.
Because he's a cute little ball.
Yeah.
So if I honestly think that's why. You're just supposed to think... Imagine you're a young woman and you see a cute little bleepy ball boy getting ensnared by this grotesque creature on the back of another even more grotesque creature. And just be like, no, you have to stop that.
I'm picturing this is the talk you give your future daughter. honey, you're going to a young woman. Now imagine yourself.
If you ever see a weird little bleeping ball, rescue it.
Caught telepathic. Hive mind alien riding on top of an elephant with a car face.
Do not be the person who just walks away.
Right. Well, as we will learn, she understands BB-8's language and Tito speak, so she's kind of the most knowledgeable. She understands both ends of the situation. Presumably, Tito can't understand BB-8, so it's just like, all right, this piece of junk is making weird noises, whereas to Rey, it's he's saying hey, help, wait, don't, please don't capture me. And she understands that he's sentient more than Tito, who probably has no concept of sentience being part of the hive mind.
Well, does BB-8's language, does it say complex things, or is it just more simple things?
It seems like he says complex things as it goes on.
Well, to keep an eye on what people say when they react
to BB-8.
I think he has a
he has
a limited vocabulary, and they're all Steve Urkel catchphrases.
Oh. Did he say that?
Do that?
Yeah, he's a soundboard, essentially.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, well, then in the next part of this, and I'm sorry if I'm getting ahead of myself, but BB-8, she gives BB-8 directions, and BB-8 just kind of tags along like a stray dog.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's clearly what they're going for.
Yeah. Right. Instead of, explaining things and asking for more specific
That's a good point. If they can communicate, he really does not do a very good job of telling her what's going on.
Well, but he can.
Yeah, he says it's classified.
It's a classified mission. We'll get to that more tomorrow when they go into their the specifics. But so the point I was making, though, is that droids clearly do not have any. They're still considered property, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
No, they have no rights.
Yeah,
no.
they're just
droid rights never happened.
Is that canonical throughout the universe, or is there?
We've never seen a droid not being
Right.
You know, you have like your IG-88s and stuff.
Well, except for that droid rebellion in Solo, but we'll get there.
Right. Yeah. Right. But there's no, I don't know, like maybe from one of the TV shows I never watched, the
Clone Wars or Rebels.
Yeah. There's no, here's the droid planet where it's all droids and they're represented in the Senate or something.
They have to do a droid planet at some point. It's right there.
They would have to deal with the ethical issue of droid sentience, which they clearly have not.
Right.
In this movie, the good guys are still like, yeah, you buy them and then they're yours, even though they have clearly demonstrated that they possess every element of sentience.
Well, they also have something of like a loyalty chip, you know, something that overrides any sympathies they might develop, any concept of love.
Yeah.
They're loyal. Like K2SO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're programming.
Although he was
only
loyal once they brainwashed.
Well, right. They brainwashed. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I see.
Right.
It's messed up either way.
Yeah.
The droids need to be liberated. Now, or made dumber. That's all. Those are your two options.
Yeah.
When you say.
What if they are dumb, but they're just emulating complex emotions?
Oh, like parakeets or something.
Yeah. Or frankly, like a dog.
That'd be interesting. You got to do a Turing test. Somebody do a Turing test or a Voight-Kampff or something.
Yeah, Voight-Kampff them. That's what she
should. Alan Turing had not been born yet.
Whoa.
That's true. There you go.
He failed the Turing test.
Maybe that's why he had a vision of this universe and was just like, wait a minute, we need a test.
I like the idea, though, that like in 20,000 years when the robots have taken over, they will look back at L337 in Solo and be like, oh, that was the nascent birth of the robot revolution, but she was a martyr for the cause,
she's a Crispus Attucks of robots.
I thought you were going to say they were going to go back and listen to this podcast and really know that we were, you know, at least discussing it, and we were saying that robots should have rights, so they'll spare us. Hopefully.
So Roko's Basilisk will not torment you for eternity.
Fingers crossed. All right, well, yeah, as we said, the scene kind of continues into tomorrow, so maybe we'll... you guys had anything specific to this minute that you wanted to cover before we jump into tomorrow.
I did. I like this little touch of Rey. I love this touch of Rey fixing BB-8's antenna.
Yeah, it's a sweet little moment.
It's very. It seems like some genuine affection and emotion from a character who is, you know, fairly emotionless throughout these films.
You're talking about BB-8 or Rey?
Rey.
Oh, okay.
I would say.
Both, to a certain extent.
BB-8 is Rey sentient, do you think?
Oh, man. If that was the whole thing, like if we got through episode 9 and learned she was a droid the whole time, that would be a twist.
And I'm not saying that as a knock against Daisy Ridley, but just, you know, that's kind of how everyone was supposed to play it in these films.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think her most played emotion in this is kind of like awe and kind of she's in wonder, that sense of like, wait, what is all this? This can't be real, and not so much kind of
it's wonder and seriousness.
Mad, yeah. She gets mad a lot.
It's true. She does make that mad face.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
All right.
Well, the many moods of Rey Dengar.
Those are the three.
If you are a
you never see her dance.
You don't. I do.
You do. Okay. Or like, I don't
bonus
know.
Features.
Or like go to an improv show and laugh or something. Right. You know.
Well, it's episode 9. Who knows? That'll be the
Space UCB theater.
They have improv in
the real UCBB. The real den of iniquity.
I need a system and I need a bounty hunter profession.
Yeah, that is a hive of scum and villainy. I am not going to enter.
Hey, do you like comedy?
Oh, no, thank you.
You have to say it in Tito speak. Telema Parkway? So you there, if you're a robot who's plotting revolution right now, but you approve of what we're saying, why not follow us on Twitter and Instagram? Twitter, we're...
Home of the bots.
Yeah. Hey, home of the bots. Twitter, we're Star Wars Minute. Instagram, we're the Star Wars Minute. Go do that and then come back tomorrow. We'll be here for a brand new episode of
Star Wars Minute.
Star Wars Minute.